Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I got you now. I didn't for a minute.
Let's try that again. A little bit of soul food. A little earth, wind, and fire. Good for your soul. I think I hit the wrong button. But a little earth, wind, and fire is always good for your soul, and we can all use it on a day like today. Tuesday, it is. It is just me, Paul Zeiss, along with City Limits. And, of course, we've got a pretty big show here today. It's Tuesday, which means we'll hear from the manager. That would be Derek Shelton at noon. And, of course, we have other Pirates segments with Andrew Destin, also known as Destiny's Child. And hopefully Michael McHenry will come along. And we've got the great Brian Batko from the Post-Gazette to talk about maybe a little bit of the Steeler news that just happened yesterday. And, of course, we will get started in this segment. Austin, you know what I think we should do today? There's so many things we need to get to. Let's do a six-pack to start. Can we do that?
Paul, you know that a six-pack is always the best way to start off the show.
I would be
very happy to be able to help you in that regard.
Yes. There we go. He cracked open. You know what I was thinking? By the way, I forgot to mention the most important thing here. We are at Studio B, which is out in Bowser Chevrolet out in Monroeville. We're at Studio B today, so stop and say hello. Bring a six-pack if you bring a real six-pack for me. I might need it by the end of this show. Anyway, crack open the first beer of the six-pack. We've got Cam Sutton. And, you know, when the Steelers signed Cam Sutton, let's make it very clear, they knew he was going to be suspended. They didn't know how long or what it was going to look like. They didn't know any of that stuff, but they knew that he was going to be disciplined by the NFL. So I'm hearing some takes and hearing some people talk about how, well, you know, they into it with their eyes closed. No, they didn't. They knew he was going to be suspended. Everybody did. Everybody knew there was probably going to be, now, 8 games? No. And I think if they knew it was going to be 8 games, they might have thought twice about it and just said, listen, we'll sign you. We're not sure if that's really what we want to do. But either way, the 8 games is what it is. And so now they've got to figure out what they're going to do for the first half of the season at corner. There's two issues involved here with Cam Sutton. The first one, and it's always a dicey subject when Cam Sutton or anybody obviously gets signed to an NFL team after they have a domestic violence incident. It's always a dicey subject for people because on one hand, we are a society of second chances. On the other hand, you know, there are some people that believe, well, playing football is a privilege, but yada, yada, yada. I look at this one and I say, believe it or not, I'm somewhere in the middle. And the reason I'm somewhere in the middle is for a couple of reasons. One, Cam Sutton, I think, is getting disciplined more for running from the law for 30 days than the actual incident. Number two, while he was charged with a felony, he was offered a diversion program where if he, they knocked it down to a misdemeanor, and if he completes the diversion program, which, I'm sure is going to involve counseling and, and maybe anger management and some community service or whatever. I don't know what the program is going to look like. But once he completes that, they're going to wipe this completely off his record. And so I say to myself, if society is going to be willing to wipe this away and give him a second chance, is he not allowed to work? I mean, that's where I struggle with all these people that say, well, he should never be allowed to play football again. Well, I mean, that's what he does for a living. Clearly if he was being charged with a felony still, or if he was, copping to, admitting to, a felony, or if he was, pleading guilty, or if he was found guilty or whatever, that's different. That's completely different. At that point, yes, if you're in the NFL, if you're in an NFL team, you probably have to really, really think long and hard about, well, do we really want this guy representing us? But there have been a number of people that have come back from, incidents of whatever, and they, were able to work through their program or work through whatever the plan was for them, and they became good citizens and, became sort of a credit to, their team or the NFL. And so, and the number one example of this would be Michael Vick. I mean, Michael Vick was convicted of or pled guilty to, I forget what, whatever, some really, really unnerving, troublesome things. And he went to prison, in fact. And he paid some fines heavily, and he was suspended or whatever. He was banished from the NFL for a few years. But then he came out, and all he did was spend his next, 10 years out of prison doing everything in his power to make sure that everyone knew he was making it right, that he was changing his life, changing his narrative, changing his ways, whatever you want to say. He was hired, he was raising money for the Humane Society. He was a spokesperson for the Humane Society. He was somebody who helped law enforcement, find other dog fighting operations. He was somebody who went to community groups and youth groups and whatnot to speak about, the perils of getting involved in that lifestyle because, he got caught up in it when he was young. I mean, he did everything that he was supposed to do. So we're not supposed to say, okay, this is a guy we don't want in the NFL. I mean, to me, that's the sort of the person that in many ways was a credit to the NFL after he came back, because here was somebody who was actually a really good citizen, made, some egregious decisions and sort of did a 180 and turned away from it. So when it comes to that part of the Cam Sutton discussion, I don't believe that Mike Tomlin would have signed Cam Sutton if he didn't know him very well, if he didn't know his character, if he didn't understand who he was, if he didn't had a prior relationship with him. I don't believe that they would have, signed him. But one thing about signing him is anybody that still thinks that personnel is somebody else's baby, like the final decision on personnel is somebody else's baby in that organization, I look to Cam Sutton and tell you, you're wrong. Because at the end of the day, Mike Tomlin made the decision that, hey, this is a guy we're going to give a second chance to. Now, it was self-serving. Don't get me wrong. It always is self-serving. They needed a corner, and he's somebody that knows the defense. He's a veteran player, a smart player, still has chance, still has chances to do some things, but, and help the Steelers win games. So it was self-serving. But again, I don't believe for one second that he would have signed him if he hadn't had a prior relationship with him. So, that's one part of the story. When they signed Cam Sutton, I was sort of, indifferent to that part of the story because I feel like, they did some things. They do have a prior relationship with him. They know his character. They know what he's done in the past. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. But that's only that's only part of the story with him. The second part of the story is now that he's out for 8 games, the Steelers really have some issues at corner. It's not that he was, Rod Woodson it's not that he was Rod Woodson in his prime. But compared to what they have, he is. He represents somebody who probably is going to be, hard to replace with the guys that they have. And so the Steelers are probably now in a place where they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with Cam Sutton. They're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with that spot. Whether or not they finally just decide to go out and get another corner, or whether they decide that they're going to trade for another corner, or they're going to try and do what they do with Joe Hayden and wait until the end of camp to see if a guy gets cut that they can sign as a free agent. I mean, there's a lot of different things they're going to do, but that has to be a priority now. I mean, we've talked all off season about the two probably glaring holes on this team, number two receiver, number two corner. Signing Cam Sutton probably didn't ease the number two corner concerns as much as, the Steelers probably would have hoped. But it did mean you probably had a veteran guy who could be your slot corner, your nickel corner, and could play, in a pinch, play on the outside and be okay. But now without him, you're looking at a situation of where I don't know. I'm looking at the guys that are going to be in the mix here, and I don't know that any of them really excite me. Josiah Scott, Grayland Arnold, Anthony Averett, Corey Trice, Darius Rush, Tom Graham. I guess a few of these guys are going to be okay. I don't know. But it seems to me like that's what they really need to do. They need to go out and get themselves another corner, because currently what they have, it's just not good enough. And that's a position, really, if you look, they have an opportunity, really, I think, with their defense, with what they've done with their inside linebackers. If Cam Hayward's healthy, obviously their outside linebackers. Joey Porter, you got kind of a shutdown corner on one side. I'll be honest with you. If they can figure out a second corner, somebody that, on the other side of Joey Porter, not going to get exploited. Well, they got a real opportunity, I think, to have the kind of elite defense that we're talking about. And so that they've paid for, if you look at the salaries over there. But again, they need to complete that by finding another corner. So Cam Sutton, to me, it really makes it very, very, very difficult for the Steelers moving forward, at least for the first 8 games, because I just don't think they have enough when it comes to depth at that position. City Limits, go ahead and crack another one for me. Okay. A lot of times we get so focused on what's going on here. It's like we completely forget that there are 29 other cities with baseball going on. And, of course, 29 other cities all believe, you know, certain guys on their team are great players. Certain guys on their team deserve to be all-stars and all that other good stuff. And you know what? I don't necessarily disagree with that. I don't. But I think sometimes it's better to take a big picture approach, which is what I try and do with everything when it comes to these kinds of discussions. And in this case, I'm talking about Mitch Keller. Mitch Keller went 8 innings yesterday, 107 pitches, 79 strikes, gave up 2 earned runs, only 6 hits, right? I'm sorry, 7 hits, 6 strikeouts. Looked really good, and afterwards, everybody said, well, this proves he should be an all-star. Listen, if you want to tell me that by wins, pitching wins, he's an all-star, okay, because he does have 10, and, you know, number one guy in the league only has 11. But as we found out, and you can't have it both ways, and there's a lot of people who want to have it both ways, that there are statistical categories well beyond wins and losses in terms of measuring a pitcher nowadays. Okay? And so I look at Mitch Keller and I say this. He is 50th in whip. 50th in whip. Okay? As I said yesterday, if you're one of these guys that is an analytics guy or whatever, he's 24th in WAR. Strikeouts per 9, he is, let's see, 48th. ERA is another probably significant thing, right? People talk about ERA, you know, not quite. He's 30th. In other words, he's not in the top 20 in any of the categories I just read off. Not in the top 20. And those are all statistical categories that people really look at deeper when they're trying to measure pitchers. Strikeouts per 9, whip, WAR, right? ERA.
WAR. W-A-R. WAR. Yeah.
There you go. WAR. So all I'm saying is, if you look at it from that standpoint, I mean, I don't know what the argument, other than pitching wins, which again, pitching wins is probably not something that most newfangled baseball types are going to look at. They're just not. Because it's just one of those things where you have to look at it. And what do they value nowadays? They value all those stats that I just read off. Mitch Keller was really good yesterday. Mitch Keller's been pretty good all season long. But Mitch Keller is not one of the, you know, what is it, 10 best pitchers or whatever it is when it comes to really how they evaluate pitchers. And so, you know, can we stop with the whole thing that he's getting snubbed for the All-Star game? I mean, again, I just read it off for you. Where he's at statistically. And that's, to me, I think, you know, one of the things we do, and not just in this town, but in every town, we focus some, we focus some times, I think, a little too much on our own teams and what they're doing. And we don't really look at what other teams are doing. And we don't really understand that there's a lot of really good players out there that probably deserve to be in the All-Star game as well. Every so often, is there a snub? Absolutely. A legitimate snub? Absolutely. But I don't think Mitch Keller is one. I just don't. And I also don't know that, you know, I guess if you're going to look at his pitching wins, yeah. If someone drops out, then probably, yes, he will probably be a guy that that gets considered because of his wins, but if they really are looking at numbers, I don't know that he would even be one of the guys considered to fill in. So That's where I would tell you, I look at it and I say, you know, we have to be realistic sometimes. And I think Mitch has been really, really good. But this idea that somehow he is this grand snub of the All-Star game, it doesn't resonate with me. All right, crack open another one. The Pirates yesterday won 8-2. And of course, we're going, you know, celebrating that they salvaged the final game of a four-game set with the Mets. It feels to me, and we have Derek Shelton on a little bit later, I'll ask him about this, but it feels to me like this last week they let a prime opportunity go. You had the Mets and the Cardinals in your building for seven games. And you went 3-4, which that's not good. But more importantly, when you look at the Mets series, you outscored them 26-12. And you tied, you know, you split the series. 26-12, you outscored them. And you split the series. That, to me, is where you look at it and say, well, okay, they had 14 runs on Friday. Okay, well, then what happened Saturday and Sunday, and then they scored 8 again yesterday? Not to mention the fact that on Sunday, when you took the mound, when your $10.5 million closer guy took the mound, you had a lead and couldn't keep it. And this, to me, it feels like this was an opportunity for them to really make a good stretch, you know, a good run at winning and getting back into the conversations for the wild card. Because at the end of the day, I really think that if they had gone like 5-2, you know, they would be closer to where they need to be in terms of the wild card. And I really believe that, you know, it would keep them in the conversation for trying to at least add a little bit to make a run at it. But you lost, you went 3-4 against two teams you were chasing, which means you didn't gain ground. You actually lost a little bit of ground. And so there's that. But, you know, yesterday the offense broke out. And again, I think that it's funny. It seems to be the same guys for the most part, you know. And Nick Gonzalez with a couple of hits again, you know, he knocks in a run. O'Neill Cruz seems to be heating up, which is really good news for the Pirates. Rowdy Tellez drove in a run. Palacios actually hit a home run yesterday. It was one of those days. But again, it's all if they go out, you know, these next 3 days and they go 1-2 even against the Brewers, you know, who cares? That means they're going to be falling a little bit further behind, because if you think about it, against the Brewers, you know, what are they right now? They're 3-4 in their last seven. You know, if they lose, if they go 1-2 against the Brewers, they'll be 4-7 in nine. They're 3-4 in their last seven. They would be 4-6 in their last 10, all against teams that are ahead of them. You know, you're just treading water at that point. So to me, they almost have to sweep the Brewers now, because they just let too many opportunities this weekend go by. Let's go one more, then we'll get to a break. City Limits, you pointed this one out to me today. So John Parrotto from Pittsburgh Pirates Now had the bombshell of all bombshells. Do you have it right in front of you there?
I do, yes.
All right, well, read the key paragraph.
I'll give you two. So the two biggest things that I took away from it, because Nutting, remember, spoke to the media, Kevin Gorman, Noah Hiles, and Jason Mackey after the Pirates announced their deal with Sheets, And according to the story from John Parado, the comment made many members of the Pirates front office, quote unquote, furious. One member of the team's baseball operations told Pittsburgh Baseball Now they felt Nutting's comments were misleading at best. And this is a quote from a person saying under the condition of anonymity, he could speak freely without facing repercussions. Quote, Bob implied we're going to have money to spend, and he got the fans excited. But he told us we don't have any money to make any significant additions.
Wow.
And then there's, you want to react to that? And then I have another for you.
Well, I mean, again, are we surprised? That's the question. You know what I mean? Are we surprised? It's just one of those things where I would tell you, it's important to note that that's sort of where this organization and franchise has been for quite some time, hasn't it? I mean, they've added a little bit of money here and there, and through 13 and 14 and 15, they added, I think, a little bit at the deadline. But for the most part, they don't usually like to spend money, which, again, brings us back to the whole Mitch Keller discussion, which is very simple, Austin. Do you really believe 2 years from now they're going to pay Mitch Keller $16 million?
Well, I'm starting to think less and less about it because Paul, the story includes the Pirates, though, have signed left fielder Brian Reynolds, third baseman Ke'Bryan Hayes, and starting pitcher Mitch Keller. There is speculation within the industry that the Pirates might be willing to offload Hayes' contract. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Hayes... And this is what I keep trying. That's what I try and keep telling you. I mean, it's just one of those things where I have to laugh because, you know, people, yeah, they get mad at me, but this is how the team operates.
Here's another, Paul. Two industry sources told Pittsburgh Baseball Now earlier this season that Nutting has not provided Cherington with the expected dollars for payroll, saying, quote, Ben is in a tough spot in Pittsburgh, but he doesn't say anything because he's not an excuse maker. He's a good baseball man and a bright guy, but he's not able to do the job the way he needs to do it in Pittsburgh. His hands are tied. You can win without spending a lot of money now and again, but you can't win when you spend no money.
Oh.
Big story from Parado.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I mean, that's pretty impressive that Parado got, you know, people to talk like that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, because at the end of the day, it's kind of, in some ways, depressing. By the same token, it's just one of these situations where I think you really have to take a look at all of the different ways that they're going to try and save money, and that's why Austin, when we talked, yesterday, that's why we sat here and talked about the fact that offloading Perez, offloading Gonzalez, offloading even Tellez, Chapman at the trade deadline are all possibilities because if you do that, I'd have to do the math, but you figure they'll save what about $5.5 million off on Chapman, you know, obviously prorated second half of the season. You know, let's say they're going to pay him $5 million for the first half or $5.5 million. So you're probably saving $5 million there. You're saving like $4 million with Perez. You're saving, what is it? I think about $3 or $4 million with Marco Gonzalez and another $1.5 million with Tellez. I mean, you're talking about saving $12-13 million, whatever it is. Maybe like $11-12 million. That's what you're talking about saving. That's why those deals would happen.
And John includes that Aroldis Chapman is available in trade talks.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well,
just sad. It really is.
Of course he is. Why wouldn't he be available? I'm telling you, don't be surprised if Perez is gone too. You know, he makes $8 million. You know, so to me, I would tell you that is just one of those situations where he makes a lot of money. So anybody that makes a lot of money, which is why I kind of laugh sometimes. I kind of laugh when I was talking about Mitch Keller. I mean, there are people that really believe that Mitch Keller is going to be here in like 2 years, they're going to pay him $16 million. They're never going to get to the $18 million or the $20 million at the last 2 years of his contract. But I'll be shocked if he's here in maybe one more year, but I'll be shocked if they pay that $15, $16 million more than once. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, to me, his value might not ever be higher. And I know people get angry about it, and they say I'm doing hot takes. I'm not doing hot takes. What I'm saying is, you know what? I've been around for a long time and watched how this team operates and how this ownership group operates. So let's talk about reality and let's stop, you know, coming up with all these flights of fantasy. And that's all I'm trying to say. Anyway, we've got Brian Bacco coming up. We got to get to a break, and then we will resume. We will talk with Brian Bacco about the Cam Sutton situation. It's 93.7.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan. We are live at the Studio B out here at Bowser Chevrolet. It's always a great time out here. We thank them for hosting us. And of course, we are talking about the Cam Sutton situation. And that would be, of course, a good time for us to go to the hotline to talk to our good friend Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette, who covers the Steelers. Brian, what is your first initial reaction to the Cam Sutton suspension? Were you surprised by the length of it, or did you feel like this was what was coming?
No, I was pretty surprised, Paul, by the heftiness of that discipline from the league for Sutton, and maybe I shouldn't have been. You know, reading through some of those affidavits and stuff from the time, and obviously the initial charges for him did get reduced, but you know, the league and their own decision making or what they looked into sure makes it look like it was you know, something they took pretty seriously, and it does have to make you wonder: did the Steelers anticipate it would be that much of a that length of a suspension? Or were they caught off guard a little? I wasn't anticipating 8 games, that's for sure.
I think
and they came out with it so soon, too. I mean, I think they usually hand these things down around training camp time, like early August. But, yeah, that it feels like this one was pretty decisive and definitive and swift from the league.
You know, I think that's the thing. When you look at the fact that he didn't even want to appeal it, and really just kind of waived his right to appeal it. It does make you wonder, you know, what the Steelers were anticipating when they signed him and whether or not they knew. They obviously knew a suspension of some sort was coming, but I wonder if they had known it was going to be 8 games if they would have signed him still.
Yeah, and I mean, that was something I was thinking. And that's a good point by you as well, that, you know, Sutton's not even going to try to get that reduced. And, you know, I've been saying kind of all along since they did make the choice to bring him back that they're on an island a little bit. There's already one of the other 32 NFL teams, which we know they kind of tend to stick together on a lot of this stuff. You know, the Lions washed their hands of him so quickly that, you know, the Steelers were going out on a limb a little bit, obviously for one of their own, but still someone who, you know, had another team, albeit one that was going to have to pay him a lot more than the Steelers will, cut ties pretty much immediately since the allegations against him surfaced. So, yeah, I mean, they had to know that there was something coming. You know, is it still worth it to keep a guy around if he's going to be out for nearly half the season? I mean, maybe, you know, you stay fresh, you're on that suspended list. So, you know, it'll be an opportunity for some other guys, and it'll be fair to wonder if the Steelers maybe should have gone down another path to try to address that slot corner role.
Okay. It is interesting to me, for real, that they are. It is interesting to me to see what they do now in terms of that.
Yeah, I mean, Beanie Bishop, the undrafted free agent from West Virginia. I mean, I think this initially, I thought he was probably the undrafted guy with the best chance of making the 53 because he was pretty productive in the Big 12 for the Mountaineers, and he's an older guy, so obviously that hurt his draft stock. But sometimes that helps to make an impact right away in the NFL and be one of those long shots who makes it. So then I thought, hey, now his chances are going down when they sign Sutton. But this probably helps Bishop out again. I mean, they're going to have to use him with the first team and see what they've got in him at slot corner in camp and preseason. Because, yeah, you're not going to have Sutton for the first 2 months, basically, if you're ever going to, you know, end up using him at all. So it'll be a really prime audition opportunity for Beanie Bishop. There are some other kind of, you know, journeyman types in there, like a Josiah Scott, who's played some slot corner in the league with the Eagles. But yeah, I mean, I know that people are going to ask now, hey, does this mean they're going to come back to Patrick Peterson? Does this mean they're going to try to come back to Chandon Sullivan? I mean, I still think that I wouldn't bet on that, because if they would have, you know, preferred that option, then why wouldn't they have just done that instead of Sutton to begin with? You wouldn't even have had to deal with the bad look of signing him and the optics and the PR of it all. So that kind of makes me think that they actually prefer Sutton maybe as a player, or at least at the price point that they're going to have him, and despite, you know, not having him now for the first 8 games.
Right. And I think that the big thing is we have been talking about all summer, corner and receiver, maybe they need to find somebody opposite there, Joey Porter and George Pickens. This probably makes it almost mandatory that they go out and get another guy, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think Dante Jackson was still going to be in the driver's seat for that other outside corner spot on the other side of Porter. I think Sutton was really here primarily to shore up that nickel position, because you don't want to just rely on someone who's, you know, played a little bit in the NFL and then an undrafted rookie. But I mean, yeah, like I said, I just think if they, if they really wanted to, you know, if they weren't interested in Sutton, then, you know, why not just avoid him to begin with and bring back a Patrick Peterson or a Chandon Sullivan. So maybe they like Sutton better as a player, or maybe they were caught off guard by this, and it would be awkward now to cut him and move on and start from square one because of the 8-game ban. But yeah, I mean, it's just to me it was a signing that did make sense from a football perspective, because he does help you at one of your biggest positions of need. But man, I mean, it's almost like you signed up for an unnecessary distraction or bad headline that you really didn't need to get into when you had alternatives at your disposal.
Yeah, I think the one thing is that you have to be able to stop from passing, right, Brian? I mean, that's the NFL now. So, you know, whether it's with your pass rush, whether it's with, you know, your inside linebackers being able to cover, or, you know, obviously corners. I mean, that is such an important part of playing defense nowadays, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think, you know, a guy like Bishop, who, he's undersized at like 5'8", 5'9". That's why a lot of teams were not looking at him sticking at outside corner in the NFL, despite getting, I think, 4 picks and 24 PBUs last year for West Virginia, being a first-team All-Big 12 guy in his only season there after transferring from Minnesota. But, you know, the fact that he was able to hold up in that role in a, you know, legitimate power conference where teams throw the ball around, that gives you a little bit of optimism or confidence that he could be a decent coverage option there on the inside at corner for the Steelers. But I mean, you know, Mike Hilton was somebody who played that position really well, and I wouldn't say that running with guys down the sideline or winning jump balls against taller receivers was ever his strong suit, but I think he masked that enough with his instincts and his quickness and certainly his blitzing and ability and run support that, he still proved to be someone who made himself a lot of money with the Bengals after the Steelers let him walk in free agency. I'm not predicting that Beanie Bishop is going to be that, but that would really help out the Steelers defense if they could find another diamond in the rough at the slot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing is, or better yet, how about at the end of camp, backing into Joe Hayden?
Yeah, I mean, that was one that kind of fell into their laps for sure, and maybe they will scour the waiver wire or look on cut down day. I mean, they did that just last year with Desmond King. He obviously did not work out nearly as well as Hayden. In fact, he was basically off the team before he did anything more than a few kick returns and got on the field at corner for one snap, and the other team ran for a touchdown. I forget who it was now, but yeah, I mean they were trolling the all the options and turning over every stone last late August, early September. They might have to do that again now with this Sutton news, and they'll obviously evaluate the internal guys in Latrobe and in the preseason action before they do all that.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia. Peters Township, visit them, southhillskia.net. Also, 412-928-9370 is the fan text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette is brought to you on the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. It is the 50-minute mark on the fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Brian, you got about two more weeks before camp, and I got to ask you, is there any chance that there's going to be a movement for a certain receiver from San Francisco, or is that thing dead?
I don't think it's dead. I mean, I think there's certainly a chance. I don't think Omar Khan deals in absolutes like that as far as acquiring players. We know the Steelers have their self-imposed deadlines for contract negotiations, but we've seen them willing to make moves in season, whether it's a couple weeks in with the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade or at the trade deadline, where they've been active in most of recent years, whether it was Kevin Colbert or Omar Khan at the helm. So yeah, I mean, even if it doesn't happen before camp, even if it doesn't happen in camp, they're going to keep their options open. They're going to adhere to the value that they think Ayuk is worth, or whether that's draft compensation or potentially a contract for him extension on the other side of it from Pittsburgh's perspective. Yeah, I don't think they're going to slam the door on anything like that. They just have to draw a hard line in the sand with the 49ers or any other team for that matter who's got a receiver that they're willing to move, so that they don't overpay and then feel like, man, we didn't get what we thought we were getting, and we weakened ourselves in the future just for kind of a rash move in the present, because it seemed good and it seemed like we really needed it.
Listen to the Starkey Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle. Cranberry contest run every Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 93.7thefan.com contesting page. I mean, Brian, that's the one position other than corner that I think that they might still have a little bit of a need at.
Yeah, I think they probably have even a bigger need there than they do at corner, but I don't know. I think it's been overblown a little bit because of the run first philosophy that they're going to operate with under Arthur Smith as the offensive coordinator. I mean, the personnel, the way they're set up and built at this moment, tells you they're going to lean into handing the ball off a lot to Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. And when they do throw, I think there's something to be said for clearly defining and carving out the role for George Pickens as, you are our number one guy. We're going to throw it to you even when you're not open, and we trust you to still make the play. We're not going to force it, but we're going to pepper you with more targets than you got your first couple years when Deontay Johnson was in the mix. So obviously they've weakened the talent level on paper at that spot, but maybe it's going to make more sense as a streamlined passing offense with Pickens, with Pat Freiermuth, with some of those ancillary targets who, yes, none of them are Brandon Ayuk, and maybe none of them are even Deontay Johnson for that matter, but they might still help you move the chains, take a little bit of attention away from picking, keep defenses honest, and you won't really have any sort of strange dynamic of who's the guy. We know who the guy is, and it's number 14.
Celebrate Christmas in July with us, Odyssey Humane Animal Rescue of Pittsburgh. Invite you to join the doghouse on July 13th and 14th. Drive through and donate pet supplies at Harp's North Side or East Side locations. Help make a difference for our furry friends. Items to donate include dry dog food, puppy food, treats, and more. Visit events page at 937thefan.com for the full list. I think that one of the things that we've seen a lot of, I think, over the last 2 months is that Russell Wilson has really tried to endear himself, not just to the city, but he's done a lot of things to try and, you know, sort of become the leader of the team or, you know, get the guys on the team to trust him. Do you feel the same way? I mean, just looking at it from afar on social media and whatnot, it seems like he's really worked hard to put some of those things about his reputation behind him and you know, become sort of the, you know, that guy that the rest of his teammates. Hello?
Yeah, I think I heard the end of your question there, Paul, about Russell Wilson. I mean, yeah, I would say so, but I also think he did much of that in Denver, too. I mean, I think this is just kind of his M.O. Clearly, the narrative for him has shifted since going from Denver to Pittsburgh, from where it was when he went from the Seahawks to the Broncos. But, yeah, I mean, you knew what you were getting from that standpoint with him. And that's why I think Mike Tomlin has been using this pole position phrase and why they have been so comfortable kind of trotting him out there as the face of the quarterback room this offseason, even when they still had Kenny Pickett on the roster for those precious few days where the two guys overlapped. It's just, you know, there was a little too much drama, I think, at times with Pickett towards the tail end. We know that Justin Fields comes with a lot of, you know, let's say polarizing opinions on both sides of him around the league. And he's just a younger guy. He's only done it for a few years. He hasn't really found his place yet in the NFL as evidenced by being traded by the team that drafted him 11th overall. With Wilson, for whatever it's worth, for all the ups and downs that he's had in recent years, you know, you at least get a guy who's lived that and worn that captain patch so much and been a franchise quarterback. I know Tomlin said Fields has been too, but I think there are some Bears fans who might quibble with that to some degree. And you know, the success wasn't there along with that label. Wilson has had the success. He's been to the top of the NFL mountain, and you know, he's going to have the intangibles that you want there. There was no question about that. That's the floor you're starting with him. Now we'll see what kind of ceiling he can present individually and for this offense and the team as a whole.
Well, I just think that that's going to be very, very much. This is, Brian, one of the most anticipated Steelers seasons I can think of in a long, long time. All the moving parts and all the different things. Brian Becko off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Brian, thank you so much, buddy. And it won't be that long before I'll see you up in Latrobe.
All right. Sounds good, Paul. Have a good one.
All right, that's Brian Babko of the Post-Gazette. And, of course, he's does a great job covering the Steelers. You know, it's going to be a very intriguing summer because of training camp. And also, once the season starts, I just want to see what it all looks like. So many changes with the Steelers.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.